Okay. I think I got this now.
As opposed to last week?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, is he done?
Yeah, that's it. I'm Steve Vincent. That's Paul Schultz. And this is the Don't Panic radio show. And nothing you're about to hear is true. This week on the show, it's Entertainment Week. We're going to talk some, a little bit about Black Panther. No spoilers. It's only been out a little while now.
Uh-huh.
And some other movies and shows we've seen. And then in the second half of today, we're going to talk about history, but we're not going to do another softcore history episode because I started researching a topic, and I think it's going to be a good one, but I didn't have enough time to do enough research to do it justice. So.
Right, because you just came up with it, seemed like, this morning, and I know you like to, you're a little bit more of a, you know, planner.
I am. I picked up on a suggestion that one of our listeners made, and I knew I wanted to do that topic, but I wanted to find an anchor for it. And so I finally, I've been thinking about it for a couple of days, and then today I finally came up with the anchor, but then I didn't, I wrote that, you know, that opening blurb that I do? I wrote that. But then I didn't have enough time to, like, figure out how to make the rest of it go. So next week, we'll do that. But in the second half, I did re-listen to one of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History episodes, and it caused me to think of a bunch of stuff that I think you and I will find interesting to talk about. Maybe our listeners will, too.
Hopefully.
But that's coming up in the second half.
Yes.
This is still the first half, for those of you who maybe you don't have that setting on your podcast machine player, podcast playing machine, and you don't know if it's first half or second half. So this is the second. This is, wait, what did I say? First half. This is the first half.
I'll fix it in post.
Yeah, right. Like you always do.
Yes.
Hey, you having a good week?
Yeah, pretty good. Been, well, we're planning my youngest birthday for Saturday, but in the meantime, rather than get work done around the house, I've been watching movies and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been good. It's been a good couple of days.
9 or 10?
She'll be 10. Well, she is. She technically is 10. She her birthday is on the 12th. But we had, well, as our listeners, even the ones on the other side of the globe, well, no, we've had some pretty shitty weather here, so it kind of waylaid her birthday plans a little bit. So, yeah, gonna do a party this weekend. I've learned my lesson. I don't do large kid parties anymore. That's just chaos. You don't need that. So we do like 2 hours with a couple of kids, and you know. I know all these kids, and they're all good kids, so it'll be a nice, you know, relatively stress-free evening.
Well, as people may not know, our kids were born pretty close together. Mine was born a couple of weeks later on the 25th of February, same age, same year, different hospitals. So we too are planning a party for this weekend. And if I sound nervous, it's because I kind of am. So we believe in planning things in dozens, like groups of a dozen things, right? So my daughter's having a skating party, sleepover. The next day is, same night, Friday night, musical, the 8th grade musical, for which my 7th grade daughter is in the lighting crew. So she's doing that.
That's cool.
And yeah, and every day this week I pick her up at 6:30. We get home about 10 after 7. tonight it stayed 10 after 7 until about 9:30.
Yeah, it's happened here too.
The battery died in the clock. And I look at my messages and you're like, "Oh, I'll be ready in 45 minutes." I was like, "Well, he's early tonight." And I realized you had sent it like 45 minutes ago. And I look at the clock and it's like, "Wait a minute."
Yeah, there's been a couple of times where we've almost missed the bus doing that. Now, when you do when you do birthday sleepovers.
Yes, sir. Just a few, like you were saying. No big things anymore.
Okay.
Just a few.
Okay, because I learned, you know, I've learned, I'm German, I've learned things the hard way. And when my oldest turned 9, I let her have 9 friends spend the night. That was a fun night. It honestly was, but about 4:30 in the morning, I had to go into her room and shut everything off because they wouldn't go to bed. I'm like, Dad's old. He wants sleep. So I'm shutting everything off. So now it's like I let him have a couple friends over for the party, and then they can have a friend spend the night because you can't go 3, and 4 is too many. So it's like, well, you get 1. I've got pictures of my oldest where I'd let him, like, I'd go out and I'd rent movies and I'd buy like soda, like the sugar soda pops as opposed to the corn syrup soda pops and snacks and stuff. And they were all sitting around my coffee table on the floor, and there's all these glass bottles all over the table. And one of them's got like her head like kind of cradled in her hand, and the other one's like kind of like looking off in another direction. I'm like, Jesus, like extrapolate that about 15 years, and that's what they're gonna look like sitting in a bar.
They'll look exactly the same.
Exactly. I'm holding on to that picture because I want to do like
heck yeah, yeah, man. In 15 years, you do another one just like it. Hey, where'd you get those sugar sodas? Did you have to go to the Supermercado to get those?
No, you know what's funny? Kroger carries, if you go into their soft drink section, Kroger even has its own brand of sugar soda. You know, like root beer, orange, cola, lemon, lime, ginger ale. And they're sugar. They're cane sugar. They're not corn syrup.
Like Mr. Pepper.
Well, no, they're just like Kroger Cola, you know, or whatever it's called. Classic whatever.
Oh, right. They all have their own, like you said, like Lemon Lime and Sprite and Mr. Pepper, Mr. They come up with some name for the Dr. Pepper flavored one.
My youngest likes the Jarritos. But I don't get her more than one every once in a while because I did the research on it, and like 2/3 of that bottle is sugar. So,
wow.
So, but Kroger's is the way to go for that.
I like how things that used to be unhealthy are now the healthy alternative.
I've said this on the show. How fucked up is high fructose corn syrup that we got excited that they put sugar back in it?
Yeah, someday it'll be like, we'll find out that something's really bad, and we'll be back on gluten. They'll invent a fake gluten,
yeah,
and it'll be really bad for you. And we'll be like, let's go back to gluten, man. Hey, have you seen Kroger's has the bread with the gluten now?
None of this.
Oh, real gluten, huh? Not that fake shit.
None of this high gluten toast.
High glutose. Whatever. Sounds like characters out of like Battlestar Galactica. Oh, hi, glutosin. So we got a party. You got a party. We all, you know what we should do? I don't know why we're cleaning two different houses. We should just combine them.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
See, this is why the terrorists hate us, because we're so inefficient. They're like, why are you clean two houses? See, we have one house for whole family, and we clean it once in every birthday party, same day.
Could you imagine a terrorist birthday party? Like the piñatas, like, you know, like the president, you know? And
wait, Hajib, do not hit that, Habib.
It's the wrong. They think the dummy with the explosives is the piñatas.
Oh man, I'm so glad we could laugh about terrorism.
I know, it's good. It's been too long.
It feels good to laugh again. Speaking of terrorism, you know, I was thinking all yesterday and then all today, most of today,
mm-hmm.
I got to watch Black Lightning because it comes out on Tuesdays. I gotta fit that in.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm going to fit. Last week I was trying to watch two and I was like right up to the wire trying to get the second one in. And apparently last week when you said after this week they're going on hiatus, you actually meant after last week they're going on hiatus.
I'm going to issue a retraction on that. Yes, I misunderstood the schedule.
You should probably do that soon. I don't know how long the retractory period is, but you should probably
mine's about short. 20 minutes. So
15 minutes?
Yeah, about 15, 20 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
On a good day with lots of fluids.
You don't have a lot of time.
Some Gatorade.
Some Gatorade. Viagra.
Some pretzels.
Oh, SFJ was funny. I asked for names for my podcast. He's like, Big Broccoli sells out to Big Pharma.
He messaged me the other morning. He explained to me how harvesting macadamia nuts for their milk is not cost efficient because of the hard shell. And I'm like, I brought it back. I'm like, save it for the show. This is gold.
So my daughter is listening. She helped me a little bit with the Cleopatra
mm-hmm.
Episode. And I let her read my notes before I recorded. And then I let her listen to it tonight. And, she's like, she's listening. She goes, reality show, like Cleopatra Kardashian. She's like, Cleo Kardashian. That's what it would be. She's like, if you bring that up on your show, you better tell everybody I thought of it.
See, this is why you can tell she's your daughter.
Yeah. Oh, and then the macadamia nut thing comes up, and she wouldn't shut up. The minute you said the Macadamian Empire, she starts going, Macadamian Empire. That's like, you know, macadamia, that's a nut. And, you know, and she's going on about macadamia nuts. And I'm like, you know, if you'd listen.
Yeah.
Instead of talking. And she's like, okay. All right. And so you hear the Macadamian Empire. And then I'm going, oh, not enough is said about the macadamia nut. It's so creamy. She's like, it is, isn't it? They should have macadamia nut butter. But she said butt butter accidentally. I was like, macadamia butt butter, that there's probably a market for that.
Mm.
And I said, by the way, if you had listened, you would have heard me make a similar joke, only about milk instead of butter. So he's saying it's the shells?
He's something about cracking the shells takes more effort than almond, and it wouldn't be cost effective. I mean, it looked like he literally cut and pasted off of like Wikipedia or something, because it was very technical about why they or he went to whatever site with it. I don't know, but it was very technical. It had something to do with the shells take more PSI to crack versus the almond, and it was quite. And I'm reading it as I'm holding my cup of coffee in my hand, and you know, trying to focus on not drowning, and I'm like, what? Save it for the show. It's like,
focusing on not drowning. I think
in the morning. You know in which the one Lord of the Rings movie where Gandalf was hanging on the ledge and he yells, "Fly, you fools!" and he falls to his apparent death. That's how I feel every morning.
Oh,
and I consider just staying awake, trying not to drown.
keeping his head above water, making a way where he can temporary layoff. So you had a chance to go see Black Panther.
Yes, yes.
Just without giving anything away, we know he's from Africa. We know he's a superhero, so you can give that away.
Yeah.
But and also, I've seen his costume.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan. Don't really like the costume, but maybe you thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I got to say that mostly it's good. I don't like the shoes.
Yeah. Leave it to you. Well, I'll just say this: there's a couple of costume alterations in the movie.
Oh.
I thought it was it's every bit as good as everyone is saying. It is also, and this, I'll give the spoiler alert warning, you can fast forward about 30 seconds. It's the Lion King.
Svidaniya.
In the movie's defense, though, it's the classic Joseph Campbell archetypical hero saga. If you know anything about his archetypical hero saga, which is, you know, king, bad things happen, Lion King is essentially the plot.
Sort of sounds like it could also be Madagascar 2.
Yes.
The one where they go back to Africa? Or was that at 3?
I don't know. Whichever one went straight to video, probably. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with that plot, because within that basic plot, which I have a problem even waste time on it, but the beauty of this particular plot was you barely paid attention to the plot. You were more interested in all this other really cool shit that was going on. And visually, of course, it's amazing. Let's just say that a lot of what we enjoy about Black Lightning is in Black Panther. Yeah, so there's that. Yeah, there's a lot of that. In fact, there's one of my the Queen T'Challa, who is Black Panther, his mother was played by Angela Bassett. Now, I have a huge soft spot for Angela Bassett. Ever since she was in What's Love Got to Do with the Tina Turner Story, I've loved Angela Bassett. I even watched How Stella Got Her Groove Back. If she's in a movie, I will watch it. She was in a series called American Gothic, I think, where she was like this voodoo queen. And I really had minimal interest in the show until I found out she was in it, and then I went back and I watched them, you know. But I'm digressing.
Is that what you call it now?
Yes, that's exactly. Dad, what are you doing in there? Be quiet, I'm digressing.
You told me you were combing your hair.
I digressed twice. But no, it's one of these movies that it has all the humor, all the drama, all the just visual amazement that you're used to with Marvel movies. And I don't know what else to say. It's definitely worth all the hype.
A couple of things complicate it.
Hmm.
One, because of the way they did the shoes, it looks like he's in a 3-year-old's footy pajamas, right? It's like, oh, that'll be so cute if the shoes have the claws on them. Like, because he's a panther. Get it? Get it? He could have those little claw things. Ooh, that'd be so cute. I can't stop looking at him. I'm like, why does he have those feet? Those are weird.
Well, it's like I said, there's a couple of costume changes. I won't ruin
different
it for
shoes.
You.
Different shoes. I hope he changes his shoes.
Yes, he switches to flats. There's a great meme I saw the other day, or meme.
Was it a GIF? or a gif.
No, it was a meme. And it had there's two white actors in this entire movie.
Okay.
And that's something that a lot of people, of course, you know, are having a big thing about. But I'm like, it takes place in Africa and South Korea. Not a lot of white people in a secret African kingdom in South Korea. So
it depends on which part of Africa.
Well, this is Wakanda, which is not to be confused with Wakanda in Chicago. Which always confused me when I was a kid, because like on the way into school they'd be given like the traffic times, and they'd always be talking about Wakanda. I'm like, I thought Wakanda was in Africa.
I thought Wakanda was George Jefferson's maid. Oh no, wait, that was Florence.
That's Florence, sorry. which is in Italy.
Yeah. Wakanda.
Anyway, the one thing I thought was funny, well, there was a lot of things I thought was funny, but one of the funniest parts about this movie was that there were two white actors in this movie, and it was the guy who played Schmeagol from the Lord of the Rings movies and Martin Freeman, who played Bilbo in the Hobbit movies. And I saw this great meme the other day that had the two... There's a scene where the two of them are, like, face-to-face. And the meme was something like the two Tolkien white guys.
Just a couple of Tolkien white guys, huh?
I thought that's about as literary... about as literally racist as you're going to get.
Dude... I know people are like, here's a movie with just mostly black people and only a couple of white people. What if we had a movie where it was mostly white people and just a couple of black people? I'm like, you mean like every other movie made ever?
You mean Hollywood?
In the history of movies? Is that what you mean?
Yep. I'm not catching a lot of that on my end of social media, and I think maybe that's why, is because even the dumbest ones are like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's like the other 11 months out of the year are White History Month. They're like, wait a minute.
Well, what if we tried to have a White History Month? Huh? What do you think of that? What about White Pride? Why can't I have White Pride? I think I did a whole rant on that.
Yes, and... You nailed it. Your white pride rant was perfect.
I think I blacked out. I don't even remember it. I was like Will Ferrell in Old School.
As soon as it touches your lips.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my assessment of Black Panther.
Hey, it's good. I got into a conversation on social media with one of my black African American gentlemen of color. Friends. Whew, almost forgot the friend part.
That's right.
That would have been racist. And, you know, he had posted something about Black Panther, and it was a little bit cryptic. Like, he was saying something like, why can't we just like this movie because it's a good movie? Why does it have to be a black thing, you know?
Yeah. And basically, I've read a couple posts like that.
Yeah, he was talking about how the alt-right, whatever that means, is all up in arms. I think he's basically talking about like Ben Shapiro and Milo Yiannopoulos and, you know, basically your run-of-the-mill crackpot attention whores. And, you know, how they're complaining that, why do we have to have a black superhero? And why can't they like white superhero movies and all this stuff? And he's basically going, dude, this is just a good superhero movie.
The same thing holds true for Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was an amazing superhero movie that just so happened to have the main character was a female, and that made it an important superhero movie. Yeah. And Black Panther is the same way. Now, if I may meta for a second, one of the things that's going around Facebook...
What do you want to meta for?
There's a lot of hubbub about And again, this post mostly comes from white people because they can't. Like in the 90s when white people started speaking Ebonics, and Paul F. Tompkins, he comes on and he's like, "Can't we let black people have one thing?" there's this thing going around where, like, you know, Black Panther is the first black cinematic superhero, and then there'll be like a picture of Blade, and I'll say like, "Bitch, please," but I'm like, but no, Blade was a vampire slayer. He was not a superhero. So I get offended by that, and it's always the same. It's always that same.
You're a snowflake.
It's right. It's always that same type of person that posts those things. But I think we know what kind of person I'm talking about. So that would think I was a snowflake. But anyway. Yeah, why can't we just call it a really damn good superhero movie?
So there was a South Park episode about the Ebonics thing. Mm-hmm. Well, probably more than one, but Chef was like, the kids are coming around starting to say his house, like talking about house instead of saying house, they say his house. Uh-huh. And he's like, "Oh, come on. Every time we come up with something, you guys got to take it over. Then we got to come up with something new." And he came up with Flippity Floppity Floop to me in like his house.
I think I saw that episode.
I'm going to go back to my Flippity Floppity Floop. And like later on, yep, the kids are like, screw you guys. I'm going to Flippity Floppity Floop. Oh, not that too.
Right.
That's 2 weeks in a row I've alluded to Chef.
You can allude to Chef whenever you want.
I don't do enough Chef on this show.
No, you don't.
Children. So this guy is talking about, why can't we just have a good superhero movie? Mm-hmm. Another guy, and then there's a couple back and forth things. And then somebody posts the Ben Shapiro thing where Ben Shapiro's talking about, you know, oh, why are black people so excited about this movie? I mean, why can't a, he's like, well, why can't a, if white people got all excited because of white superhero, it's, he's going on about this. And
except we did.
So somebody goes, somebody said they were just not understanding what is going on, right? And I said, mm-hmm, okay. And he said usually I can see both sides of things. He's like, the whole kneeling at football games thing, he's like, I can kind of see both sides, and but this one I don't see it. And so of course I got on in my self-imposed exile. Hey, if it's self-imposed, I can unself-impose it from time to time.
Exactly. Right? You are the master of your own destiny.
So I said, well, first, here's what's going on. What you're seeing is a culture that you're seeing people play on people's fears. So Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos, the other guy, Steve Bannon, that whole crowd. Basically, they look at it and they go, okay, I'm gonna appeal to the lizard brain, and I'm going to cause them to be afraid of something, right?
Right.
So the thing I'm going to be, the easiest thing to make them afraid of is that they're going to lose their status in life, and they're going to lose something, right? They're going to lose power. They're going to lose safety. They're going to lose something, their identity, okay? Mm-hmm. And so what I have to do is I have to come up with ways to make them think their identity is under attack, right? So just there's a whole pattern, right? Mm-hmm. Immigration. Well, that's all rapists and murderers. We got to build a wall, right? Mm-hmm. Terrorism. Oh, all Muslims are, well, they want to kill all of us. Every last one of us. And they hate our way of life and they want to kill all of us. And black people, the more power black people get, and it's not just about them being equal. No, they're not going to stop there. They're going to come and the next thing you know, you'll be in the minority and you'll have no status whatsoever, right? So I'm the guy you need to listen to because I'm the canary in the coal mine. So tune into my channel you know, so that I can get advertisers and make money, right? And before the callers start calling in or tweeting me, I get that it happens on both sides. This conversation happened to be about this side. And by the way, It may happen on both sides, but here's a compliment, alt-right people. You're way better at it than the other side, right? The other side, I see trying it, like Colbert and Seth Meyers and those guys. Mm-hmm. They try to do it, but they kind of, they're not as good at it, right? But so anyway, so there you go, compliment. So I was explaining that to the guy, and I was like, and while you're bringing up the kneeling thing, I don't understand how you can see both sides, because there's really only two sides. Mm-hmm. One side is where people think these guys were disrespecting the military and disrespecting America, and then the other side is reality. Right? That's the two sides.
You're exactly right.
That's the two sides. I don't see how you can see the side that's not reality. Unless you're living in a non-reality world. The guy, as soon as this Kaepernick dude, as soon as he heard that military people thought he was disrespecting them, he found the badassest military veteran that he could and asked him. He's like, look, here's what I want to do. I want to protest. I want to bring attention to this topic that I think is important. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to disrespect the military. What do you think? And the guy's like, well, don't sit on the bench. Kneel. When you kneel, it's like a sign of respect.
Yeah.
You kneel before your God, right? What's more respectful than kneeling, right? So kneel, and that'll do it. So he's like, cool. And then repeatedly they said, and then people are like, oh, well, it's a workplace thing. I mean, you have to do your job. It's part of the job. And I'm like, the owners went out and stood with them, mm-hmm. right? And basically mm-hmm. said, no, we don't care. They own the business. I thought business owners should be able to treat their employees however the hell they wanted to treat them. Now you want to force them to fire these guys. And so anyway, it took me a long time to type that because I was using my thumbs. But I got most of it out. And that's where I learned the term virtue signaling because I think that's what I was doing. Because mm-hmm. I knew a lot of black people were on this thread. And I thought,
yeah.
I got to make sure they know I'm on their side, you know?
Right.
And then I said, on a different comment, I said, by the way, if you want a show about a superhero who's black and it has everything to do with him being black, and he has a black family, he's living a black experience, and it's a show about being black and being a superhero, go watch Black Lightning, because that's what that show's about.
That's right.
That's not just some other superhero movie. This ain't Greatest American Hero. Right? This isn't Shazam. This is a show about a black superhero because he's black.
Yes.
It's in the name, Black Lightning. Well, I guess it's in Black Panther too, but
there's three things. One that I mean
I hope you were taking notes.
Oh, I was trying to keep
I was talking to the listeners. Oh. Pull your car over, get out a piece of pencil and a paper.
That's
start
right.
taking notes.
Three things. One, anytime someone says, usually I can see both sides, that's tantamount to, I'm not racist, but, yeah. or, I just want to say this, those kind of things. The other thing is, God damn, you were on a fucking roll, man. I'm like,
I blacked out again. I have to play the recording back to see if that was really me.
You fucking nailed it. Every fucking word. Also, to say, why can't we have, you know, why can't we just call it a superhero movie? Those are the same people that say all lives matter.
Yeah.
And then one of the, because my life is a series of memes. One of the best memes I ever saw recently was something to the effect of, like, because, see, white people are so worried about losing whatever our identity is supposed to be and becoming the minority. And this meme said something like, white people are all crazy about, you know, becoming the minority by 2047 or whatever. It's almost like being a minority in this country is like a bad thing.
That's good. All right. As I said, no soft core history this week, but I did, you know, our listeners love history, and at least 20% of them, which I think is Andy and Paul Wallstorff, listen to Dan Carlin podcasts. And so the three of us sort of share that. You know, we'll always have that.
You'll always have your hardcore history.
And today I was re-listening to one of the Dan Carlin episodes called the Dwyer Outlook. Dyer Outlook. It's just an interview with a historian, which is great. But he asked this question that I wish I had the answer to 25 years ago, because I started realizing that I had not learned history in school.
No, seldom do you learn history in school.
I did figure out how to get good grades on tests. That's in school.
That's public education in a nutshell.
Some of those were in classes with the word history in the title.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what I need is a book that goes all the way back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of the beginning, right? And then
that's the Bible, Steve. You need a Bible. You don't need
that book that was written in like 400 AD?
Wait, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, how do you get original sources for that one?
There's a Wikipedia joke in there somewhere.
There goes our Christian listeners. I wanted that, and I thought, where's that book? And it was around the same time that I read The Universe and Dr. Einstein, which basically does that, but for physics. Mm-hmm. And it like catches you up with, okay, here's everything we know about physics, but written in a way that you can understand it. And, you know, you don't need all the gory details. Just broad brush, where do we stand, right? But I wanted that same book for history, and I never found it. So the closest thing I've come to that is the Dan Carlin podcasts and the Daniela Bellelli podcasts, and then this other guy named Daryl Cooper. And they kind of, if you listen to their, you'll get most of history if you listen to their podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, still not quite. You know, the thing I was looking for? Well, so I'm listening to this Dyer Outlook, or this Dyer interview with Dan Carlin, and he asks almost that exact same question. He says, okay, I get a lot of tweets, I get a lot of messages from listeners who say, okay, I get it. We need to understand history, you know, but I'm not going to be a history scholar. I'm not going to go to college and study history. What do I need to know? What's the one or two or three books I need to read that'll give me what I need to know about history? And so Dyer starts off answering it. He's like, well,
please let one of them be Chariots of the Gods.
No. Oh. I haven't read that. Is that the one about the Coke bottle that falls out of the sky?
Oh, no. Chariots of the Gods is about... is speculation about how aliens helped form, you know, humanity and stuff.
2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah, pretty much. But written by a Swede. Anyway, please continue.
I will. So he started out by saying, well, first you have to ask, why is it important to know history? And so actually Dan Carlin's like, yeah, that's the normal question I ask. But I keep getting the same answer, so I decided I would change the question a little bit.
Well, you know what? That makes total sense.
And he said every historian he asks like gives the same answer, and he's like, you can probably guess what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But Dyer said, well, okay, but I'm still going to answer that question. And it's probably not going to be the same, and it made me think of something I've heard elsewhere. But they didn't mention this, but the obvious answer is people say, well, those who don't understand history are bound to repeat it.
Yes, the Carlos Santana quote.
Actual, like, fans of history and people that kind of have looked a lot into history, they kind of go, well, that's not quite true, actually. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And I forget who said that. Some humorist. So what Dyer said is there's really two things. One, understand how it works, how things kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
How do things get done throughout history? Recognize those patterns and just go, oh, here's how governments form. Here's how societies form. Once they're formed, here's how they kind of work, how things like happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just sort of understanding the mechanics of how everything fits together, right? And the other is just figure out, you know, just to know where you came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, so he said mostly in our history classes, it's all dates and names and all that stuff. So that's... you're just getting kind of the what happened part.
Yeah, you're putting the dates. You're putting math into my history. Now, I'm not a math fan, so I'm already bummed that I already took math class. Yeah, I know. I'm, you know, I already
four score and 7 years ago. Oh, whoa. Wait a minute. That's math. It is weird that Lincoln put math in that very important speech. He starts it with math.
Well,
like, how many people even heard the rest of the speech? Because how many were going, wait a minute, what's the score?
Well, at that 20? Point, women couldn't vote four. Anyway, so they didn't have to keep score. You know, they didn't have to do the math to figure it out.
Wah, wah.
Anyway.
47 years ago, everybody assumes Lincoln sounded like this.
That's right.
Okay, so that's the why of history. And then I'm sitting there thinking, okay, there's this book that I just started listening to / reading called Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Isn't that a Warren Zevon song?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking, wow, you know, I'm only about halfway to three quarters of the way through it,
mm-hmm.
but it starts at almost the very beginning, right? And starts to get into how societies form and all that stuff and why some societies are more, you know, basically why some societies have become more successful than others, right? And I'm thinking, wow, that would be a good one. I wish I'd read that one 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, it was just written about eight or 9 years ago. But anyway, so this historian goes, well, you know, it's not really a history book, but I think it serves the same purpose. There's this book called Guns, Germs, and Steel. I'm like, what? I almost like fell out right then and there because I was like, man, there's nothing more meta than me thinking he should say Guns, Germs, and Steel. And he says, Guns, Germs, and Steel. Like,
wow. Yeah, send me a link for that or a message for that so I can look into that because it sounds interesting.
Yeah, so basically then he goes on to just sort of describe the premise of the book,
mm-hmm.
which is there's this anthropologist that did a lot of work with people in New Guinea.
Mm.
And, you know, studying.
Is there an old Guinea?
I think it's just called Guinea.
Okay.
I don't know where it is.
Maybe it's like built under the New Guinea.
So are guinea pigs from Old Guinea or New Guinea?
I don't know where they come from, but they can stay there. I hate them old things.
And then where does Papua New Guinea fit in? Is that the same place? Just like combined? Like, is that the hyphenated like maiden name with the last name? What is that?
Windsor Jones.
This is Mrs. Reginald Papua New Guinea. So this anthropologist is in New Guinea and he starts to like make friends with these basically Stone Age people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have some primitive. Some primitive agriculture. They're like just getting started on agriculture and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
So he gets to know these people though. Like he becomes friends with them and stuff. And like one of the guys, like with meaning no disrespect, goes up to this and he's a British anthropologist. And this guy's like, you know, you and I, you know, you're no smarter than me. And I mean, no disrespect, but the guy goes like, no, I would not argue that point. You're as smart as I am. Absolutely. He's like, so my people in general are probably as smart as your people. He's like, totally agree. Yep. Well, why is it that you guys, like we barely have any control over even our local environment. Right? If you guys wanted to, you could just wipe us off the island, right? And you guys have all this great stuff that you're importing to our island, and this food and the abundance of everything, while we're just sitting here scratching out a living, right? Well, these guys have gotten to know each other enough that they clearly, he's like, just why is that? We know each other well enough that we know it's not something about me and my genetics or my intelligence or whatever. So why is that? So the guy took that question and basically devoted years of his life to trying to answer it. And the book was kind of a result of that.
You know, I admire that kind of dedication, because I ask myself shit all the time, and I don't go beyond just thinking about it for a little while.
Maybe Wikipedia. If I'm super committed to the answer, I might go to Wikipedia. But I'll only read as much as is on the page before I have to start scrolling.
I know, right? Because that's annoying.
Yeah. If I have to start scrolling, somebody has assigned me a project. It's not my own choice.
That's right.
So anyway, this guy gets into that. Now, this is a very timely topic, because social media is good and bad. It's good because you can connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad because you find out what shitheads some people are.
Yeah.
Maybe that's good. Maybe it's good that I know what shitheads there are. But I have honestly seen people say, well, obviously white people, not, they didn't say these words, excuse me, but they came really close to saying, well, obviously white countries are better than the black countries. I mean, look at Haiti. Look how fucked up Haiti is. Look at all these African countries, how fucked up they are. Look at the white people that came over from Europe and wiped out the natives that were here in North America. Clearly, these people are better than those people, right? So when you look at the evidence, you find out it's really, why have Europeans been more successful than, say, the Algonquins? It's a kind of a roll of the dice.
I think they just have a better immune system.
Well,
that's the only thing I can.
That's the germs part. So then you ask, why do they have a better immune system? So the way he starts out the book is he talks about Pizarro invading South America, and basically with a few hundred Spanish troops,
yes,
conquer South America, right? Mm-hmm. 12 million Incas in a vast empire. He starts out with that, and he's like, clearly the what he calls the proximate causes, like the immediate ones you can see.
I mean, if you've seen like the Incan weapons, some of the weapons they had were horrifically good at slaughter.
Yeah.
Yet somehow this handful of guys managed to wipe them out.
One, guns, germs, and steel.
Mm-hmm.
They had gunpowder, and primitive as they were, they had rifles.
Right? Yeah.
Guns.
Well, right? No rifles, but yes.
They no had rifles, guns. Yeah. Muskets and cannons.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They had horses.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Inca had never seen a person ride another animal. They had llamas,
yeah,
but you don't ride a llama. Right? Llama can't carry shit, right? Compared to a horse. They had steel, so they had armor,
mm-hmm,
and they had swords that didn't like break. So these Incas had basically, wound fiber armor.
Yeah, they had Stone Age technology, but they had numbers and home court advantage. And they still lost.
Well, the germs part.
Yeah, yeah.
The germs part, 95% of the natives in the Americas died from disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Pizarro had no idea, right? So you almost can't believe, you can't blame white people for thinking they're superior, because they didn't realize that all these other factors came into play.
Mm-hmm.
They just figured, hey, God's on our side. Look, not only did a few hundred of us kill thousands of them,
right,
but now God's killing the rest of them with disease, right? And And when you look at it through that lens, you kind of go, oh, well, I get why they thought they were superior.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this book, basically, it, you know, even on audio, it's like 15 hours, but it gets into all the details of, okay, so those were the immediate causes, right, of how a few hundred were able to beat, you know, millions.
Mm-hmm.
But why did they have guns? Why did they have germs on there? So why were their immune systems better? And why did they have steel? Well, now you got to go all the way back to when civilizations first started forming and what was available to the people at that time. Mm-hmm. From an agriculture perspective, from the availability of animals that you could domesticate.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you ain't going to domesticate a bison.
No.
And you might go, well, but there were some horse-type creatures when they first came over the land bridge from Asia. Yeah, but at that time, they hadn't developed agriculture yet, so they would have starved if they didn't kill things to eat. So they basically killed all the things that could have been good for riding or pulling plows or whatever. Anyway, it's awesome. So here's the thing about history that just I love and hate at the same time. It's like every time I run into somebody who doesn't understand, the first thing I think is I don't understand either. And I didn't understand either, but I'm trying to understand.
Right.
I'm trying. Was it Fonzie? No, what does he call him?
Ringo.
Ringo, I'm trying real hard. Oh. It's like, just stop and at least try. Just realize you don't understand everything.
Well, my dad and I, like, almost regularly we have this conversation where we sit there, we have our coffees, and we try to figure out how the fuck we survived as a species. The only thing we nailed it down to was numbers. That's the only thing that saved us as a species was numbers, because, you know, this species encounters this group encounters this group, and this group dies because that group had, you know, whatever plagues it brought along with it. We were fighting with sticks, and there was a time during the last ice age where humans were down to a couple of hundred thousand, and yet somehow, because you know, we thrive, we multiply, because, you know, apparently sex is awesome. That's the only thing I can figure.
That's our big brains.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We have no claws, we have no fangs, we have no fur, we can't see in the dark, but somehow we developed this brain that allowed us to. One of the things I saw in a documentary was what brought man from basically being an ape is forethought, planning. Going, maybe tomorrow this fruit might not be here. So we had, we had the big brain. But against all this, and then stuff we couldn't see, like all the diseases and whatnot, I don't know. And, you know, when all these people that came into, you know, the Aztecs and whatnot, you know, the whole Montezuma's Revenge, And all that, we still somehow survive. You know, when diarrhea could kill you. In 1917 or whatever, when the flu swept through this country and killed thousands of people.
The flu epidemic of just right after World War One, like in 1920, killed
That's 20 what it million was. People. It was 1920, because that's what killed most of Ray Bradbury's brothers and sisters. Wow. We weren't ready for it, and we think, well, now it's like we get the flu, like, well, I want to miss work for a day or two, and I got to take some of this and get my bottle of Gatorade, and I'm okay. But back then, it's like, you know, oh, I shit my pants. Well, this is it, guys. I'm dead. How did we survive as a species?
You know, this book, it's funny because it's Guns, Germs, and Steel. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was trying to explain how we survived, but it did say something that I found interesting, which was, like, you might ask, like, germs evolved the same way people and animals or whatever evolved. Mm-hmm. It's like, why would a germ evolve to kill people, right? Well, at some point, the germ doesn't care that it killed somebody because, let's say, diarrhea is a good example because mm-hmm. it's figured out a way to get itself out of the host organism and into another host organism, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Diarrhea. We see it as a symptom where germs see it as an evolutionary advantage, right? Get me out of here and into the water supply where somebody else will drink me, my kind, and we'll spread that way. It's not maybe not smart enough to not kill off people, but one of the things that did happen over the course of history is, you know, certain diseases were 90% lethal at one point, and then mm-hmm. the next time around they were only 50% lethal, and then they became 20% lethal. And the thought process is people develop immunity, and the people who already were susceptible to developing immunity were in that 10% that didn't die, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so now those are the ones reproducing, right? So the next time you're less likely to have more die. And they think that is also the germs playing a role, because evolution would not want them to kill everybody off, right?
Right, right.
Because then there's nobody else to infect, right? So it's just bizarre how, but I agree with you. You know, I would love to have that conversation with your dad and you. I'd do most of the talking, I think.
Yeah, he'll listen, and then he'll tell you what really happened.
Well, if this show is any indication, I'd probably do most of the talking in relation to you. And then I've had conversations with your dad before.
No. Yes, short-lived as they are.
Professor, how's that book learning? It's all right, Mr. Schultz.
That is an actual conversation that Steve had with my dad, ladies and gentlemen. I was there.
Multiple times.
Yes, every single time.
Hey, Professor. How's that book learning? That's good. Oh, and then I started to add to it after my couple of summers at the foundry.
Mm.
I started to add to my answer. And I would say, well, the book learning is going all right, but you know what? It's going to take more than book learning, because there are the guys out there who really know what's up. You know, it's like, I was like, wow, man, it's felt so good to get that like inspiring speech from him.
Yeah.
That I felt like it was affirmation.
The same speech that, you know, his own children had to work 30, 40 years to get.
So I got something.
Hmm.
Either my brother Mike was hacked or he's going meta on us. And I'll tell you what I mean here in a second.
I think I know what you mean, but go ahead and tell the listeners.
I was perusing our Facebook group. And here's a couple of statuses. Ever notice that during presidential talking moments, all you can hear is the clicking of cameras? Can they just take a video and use a clip to put in the paper? The other one was, ever notice during sports press conferences you can never hear the question, just the coach answering? So first of all, those are funny. Mm-hmm. I laughed when I first read them. I may not be laughing now because I already got the laugh out. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are funny. And I'm being serious. Second of all, I was like, he's going meta. He's being like Seinfeldian on us.
Mm.
Right, those are very Seinfeldian.
That's what I got out of them. They were
observational
very
jokes, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, ever notice how? What is it with press conferences?
What's the deal with press conferences?
So, Seinfeld.
yeah.
You have a love-hate relationship with Seinfeld.
No, I have a hate relationship with season one and a love relationship with the other nine. No, wait, eight. I think it went nine seasons. The remaining seasons of the show.
Sounds
and boring. As a matter of fact, my son has recently discovered Seinfeld. Ooh. And it's weird watching it because he's 14. And this show started in 92, I think it was. And it's crazy because there was one episode. The famous episode where George and Jerry and Elaine go to the Chinese restaurant. And they're waiting and waiting. This is in, I think, season two. And they're waiting for their table. And the whole show is in the restaurant.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And George has to, he's got his eye on the payphone because he's got to call this girl back that he has no business dating because she's too incredibly, you know, gorgeous for him, and it's a whole big joke. And he's watching the payphone, and I'm watching this with my son, and I'm like, periodically I have to stop and explain to him. We didn't have cell phones back then. There was no texting. This is how much life sucked. And you and I had done a show a while back about how going to the movies was an ordeal because you would get to the theater and say, well, are they in there? I don't know. Why don't you call them? The cell phone isn't invented. I can't even text them, you know? And he absolutely... I for the longest time, I've called him Kramer because as soon as he hears a noise in the kitchen, he just comes like... falling into the kitchen and like to see what's going on. And I'm like, okay, Kramer. And he never got the joke. Well, now he's watched enough Seinfeld. And he even watched when, because Jerry has that writing in comedians in cars, you know, drinking coffee. And Michael Richards was in an episode of it and he was being very Kramer.
Oh.
So he kind of got to see, you know, why Dad calls him Kramer. But well, the funny thing I've noticed is watching it with him is, and like I've told you, I've recently started watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm into season two now. I watched the massage therapist episode today, and which was funny. And I'm watching this going, yeah, this is almost like the, what do we call it? Like the spiritual sequel of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm not going to let him watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he's enjoying Seinfeld. So
that's good. I think it kind of, I was not a fan of Jerry and Elaine dating.
Yeah, when they weren't dating, they were better. I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus is adorable because she's like 4'2". She's so small, and I think she's adorable. But yeah, when they were dating, it was not good. But once Kramer comes into his own and George stops doing so much just monologues about his day,
yeah,
and they start having like when his mom and dad get introduced and things like that, that show just... And my son's laughing the whole time. And I'm like, just wait. We're only in season three. In like two more seasons, this show just starts to take off in a whole different direction. And a whole... I mean, the humor of it just gets so much more, you know, funny.
Does he ever ask, like, were women's shoulders really that big and pointy?
No, that's not something he notices. My girls notice it though, because they're like their dad. They're fans of Golden Girls, and those women were like football player shoulder pads, you know. Yeah. And every once in a while, my oldest will buy a jacket from Goodwill, and she's like, "What's this?" I'm like, "Well, honey, that's a shoulder pad," because for some reason, you know, somebody thought women should have shoulder pads like football players. Like,
this is the weird thing. Even then, I knew it was stupid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, we look at it now and go, oh, you know, when you're living it, you don't realize how stupid it is. And then later on, you go, look how stupid. I'm like, no, I pretty much looked at those things like, why would you do that? What are you doing? What is that even for?
Is it like the female of the species has exhibited her high shoulder pads, thus enticing the male of the species to want to propagate with her?
Right. I never once looked at a girl and thought, oh, look at those shoulders. I also never thought, oh, my God, look how high up her hair is. Wow. Got to have me some of that. It's crazy what they thought back then.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, all that stuff is coming back. Although my daughter tells me, but just the good stuff. It's not like the bad stuff is going to come back.
That seems to be the case. I mean, think about it. In the 90s, the 60s came back in a big way. But because girls started doing the straight hair. Yeah. They rebelled against the high hair, and they went with the straight hair, and they went with, you know, the flares and things like that, and the low rider jeans and stuff that. And they took the best parts of it and mutated it into something more appealing than like you're not gonna look at like a picture of, you know, like your aunt from the 60s and go, man, she was dressing like she was hot. Yeah. But like you'll look at pictures of just the best part of it, and they'll turn it into something.
The best part, which will not be your shoulders. All right, man. Tell you what, it's not going to get much better than that.
Unfortunately.
All right, let's wrap it up. You got anything else you want to add to posterity?
I think I've said too much already.
Okay. In that case, for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing you just heard was true.
Fall down on me, and the sun refused to shine. Then may the shackles be undone. May all the old words cease to rhyme. If the sky turn into stone, it will matter not at all. For there is no heaven in the sky. Hell does not wait for our downfall. Let the voice of let the fires vanish for all time. God traces him all unseen. You can ask him what it all means. He was never on your side. God was never on your side. Righteous dogs. They claim to heal, but all they do is steal. Abuse your faith, cheat and rob. If God is wise, why is he still? When these false prophets call him friend, why is he silent? Is he blind? Are we abandoned in the end? Let the sword of reason shine. Let us be free of prayer and shrine. God's face is in, turned away. He never has a word to say. He was never.
never on your side.
Bullshit.